About in and out of sports in the Coach's Corner with Coach Butch McAdams. And this show is sponsored in part by Horton's Funeral Services, Dr. Edward T. Buford, and the Athletic Republic. And as always, powered and partnered with the African American Athlete.com. And that means my man, golfer extraordinaire, Rick Hampton Sr. Well, folks, as always, I've got a good one this evening in the Coach's Corner. He is beyond legend status in the D.C. area. I call him a D.C. treasure. He is a graduate of Spingarn High School in the District of Columbia, also a graduate of North Carolina A&T, and was a teacher, coach, administrator, won a city title in 1974 at Eastern High School, and boy, up at, on the hilltop at Howard University, his teams were awesome. A total record of 228 victories and just 169 defeats. He is Coach A.B. Williamson. Coach Williamson, man, you know it's always an honor to visit with you and pick your brain on sports and other issues. How are you?
Oh, doing great, Butch. Thanks for having me on. Mm-hmm.
Always a pleasure. And, but Coach, before we really get into it, the first thing I guess that's on everyone's mind, especially in the world of sports, will there be at least this year, this calendar year, the fall season, will there be sports? And I'm looking just as recently as today where a black college program, I think your alma mater, A&T, where some of the football players tested positive for the coronavirus. Coach, your expertise being around athletics at high school level, the collegiate level for years, what do you foresee?
Well, Butch, I hate to be the doom and gloom, but from what I see, and I've been saying it for the last couple of months, I don't see college sports in the fall. Not many. Maybe the major, the SEC, Big Ten. Big Ten has already dropped down to only 10, to only conference in football. But there's a major pandemic going on now. And I can't see where each school is equipped, both staff, both doctors, and those kind of people and facilities that will allow us to have collegiate sport and particularly football in the fall. When you are only 2 feet from your opponent across the line, and a football is a game of the big guys. If they get sick, two or three of them, it's going to kill the sport. There probably won't be, I think they've already decided, it won't be spectators. But I don't see it. Us having football especially, and maybe not all sports. Right now, it's a gradual thing. You see a few conferences making the decision early to move out. I think what the CIAA did was excellent. They decided to move all the sports spring, have just conference football and all the other fall sports in the spring, which allows all of the kids to get scholarships. At least they will be seen in some manner, and they will be able to get rewarded for that. So I think that looking at Hampton has just taken on their own. They didn't wait for the Big South to tell them. They just decided not to have fall sports yesterday or today. And A&T did have some positive. And I hate to say it, but many more probably to come. This virus is not under control, and it may not be. It's going to take another 4, 5, or 6 months. Hopefully, they will have some type of remedy for it by that time. But very tedious, very strange times, and administrators and presidents are going to have to make student athletes and students in general have to come first.
Yeah, I would agree. And, Coach, yeah, it's being reported that North Carolina A&T has 4 positive coronavirus cases among student athletes since their return to campus on July the 6th. And they're saying that all 4 of the student athletes are asymptomatic. And so, yeah, as you just said, you just can't take that chance because this is something that we've not seen before. It's uncharted waters. And it's not worth the risk. No, not at all. Let's also talk about now the MEAC. Coach, so many teams are vacating. They're leaving. They're exiting the MEAC. What is the future of the MEAC conference?
Well, but I feel very strongly and positive about the MEAC. There were a lot of students would not have been able to get their education if it wasn't for the MEAC, CIAA, and SWAC, and the rest of the predominantly black conferences. I think the MEAC will survive. I think Dennis Thomas, the commissioner, is a very capable leader. I think it came down to dollars and cents, as most things do with a sport. When you have Bethune-Cookman and Florida A&M so far away, to have to travel that 900 to 1,000 miles for not only football and basketball, but they have to travel with that for the volleyball, all the other male and female sports. Too much. And I think some of the decisions that are being made, just like Howard decided to have 6 of their minor sports, to participate in conferences very nearby, Northeast Conference. And I think these are things that you have to take into account. Although what the Florida A&M and Bethune, they have to go to Houston, and that's 900 miles and 1,000 miles, but I think they just feel more comfortable playing against rivalries in the South. I think the MEAC will survive. I feel like there will be some waivers and other things given to the conference by the NCAA that will allow them to take some other schools in, and they will keep on rolling. I certainly hope so, because there's a deep-bedded historical situation with those great teams in the MEAC, and they still have some very good teams and great coaching. I think what a lot of major colleges found out is that these guys can coach. They just don't get the exposure. And now we have Maker going to a major coup going to Howard. Whether he stays 1 year, 4 years, or whatever, it's still a major coup. And when one starts to come, another one will come. They see that they can get, if you can play, you can make it from any league. It's a matter of what you're looking for in as a collegiate athlete. The payment under the pay part of and the gambling, I'm not with that, because how do you separate a professional from a person that is an amateur? So it's a thin line, and it should not be a thin line. It should be definitely amateurs versus professionals, and they just be patient. They'll get there if they have the ability.
Coach, I want to go back to Maker. And I'm cautiously optimistic that he will sign. But I'm letting people know that, hold it, you know, let's not celebrate yet. And, man,
yep.
I want to see this young man go to Howard for so many reasons. It would be great for HBCUs across the board. I'm a good friend of Coach Blakeney. But he's just made a verbal commitment, as you know, Coach. He hasn't signed anything yet. And a
Absolutely.
Lot of things can happen. So I'm waiting. I'm waiting, Coach.
Yeah, I'm holding my breath, too. And I'm hoping Blakeney did a great job. And I'm glad to see him make that coup. Because he really needs to build the program back. But you're right. There are so many other opportunities for young people, especially if they're 6'11", can run like a deer, like this kid Maker. You also have the G League. He could just say, hey, I'm going to the G League and play a year. And then I'll be professional next year. There are so many things that can happen. I'm just hoping that he'll continue and sign with the Bison and have a great freshman year.
Coach A.B. Williamson is in the coach's corner this evening. And, Coach, you had a team. You had some great teams. But that 1 year with the Dunk Patrol, with the talent and the continuity that unit showed, you guys could have played and competed against high-level big schools that year. And I think that team goes to show, Exhibit A, that regardless of where you go, if you can play, they'll find you, and if you can play, you'll get recognition.
I agree with you. That team could have gone many places. And what people don't really know, but the year before, we were playing better. You know, sometimes how you're playing at a given time.
Mm-hmm.
The 79-80 team was playing. We had just finished. We went to the South. We played down Florida A&M, Southern. And I think we'd won like 9 or 10 straight. But the MEAC was not getting an automatic bid that year. The same kids were on that team that ended up on the Dunk Patrol. The Dunk Patrol was actually a 2-year thing. And we had magnificent athletes, and it takes a little luck. We had a big kid named James Terry out of Cleveland. When he came to Howard, he was 6'6". When he left Howard, he was 6'11 and a half.
That's right.
So you have to be a little lucky. And then we had Rodney Wright and James Ratcliffe transferred back from major schools. And we had Larry Spriggs come back to the area from junior college, and he played at Northwestern here. Outstanding young man, played about 8 years professionally, NBA as well as overseas, Houston Rockets, L.A. Lakers. Great kids. And we had one kid, also the 2-year, the 3-point rule wasn't in at that time. If Bernard Player had played doing the 3-point like these guys are shooting now, I haven't seen any of them that could shoot any better than he could at 6'5 out of Smyrna, Georgia. So,
yeah,
yes, we had some quality kids, and I still communicate with them. Please give a prayer out to Rodney Wright. He's battling a lot of things right now after having a stroke. And that's my man. I think we probably talked almost every day until he had the stroke on the golf course. For all D.C., please send out a prayer for Rodney Wright.
Absolutely. He is a great guy. I love him to death. And, Coach, you had so much talent, and it was almost, from a role perspective, a perfect team. You had the aforementioned Rodney Wright, who is the epitome of what you want as a point guard, a floor general, a coach on the floor. You had the young man you just said that could just shoot the ball. Then you had the big guy in the middle, rim protector, rebounder. Mm-hmm. And you had James Ratcliff, who, if folks don't remember Rat to me was a carbon copy, a smaller version of Bob McAdoo. I mean, he could, at 6'7 or 6'8, he could go on the perimeter and hit the shot. He could go to the basket. And, of course, Larry Spriggs, as you mentioned, played multiple years at the professional level, could do it all. That was a good team. And here is the little unknown fact. And we rave, and rightfully so, we talk about our D2 champions, UDC, with the great Will Jones and Earl Jones and Michael Britt, Kenny Payne. But when they challenged you guys for a game, you beat them. A lot of people don't know that or don't recall that. And while they were Division II, that was still a big game for you guys to win.
Yeah, it was like for the city championship. Georgetown wouldn't play it. So that's a game we'll never forget. It was at the D.C. Armory. And
oh, yeah.
It was standing room only over at the D.C. Armory. And Will Jones was a showman. I love him to death. God bless him.
Yeah.
But they had a wonderful team with all types of athletes from the D.C. area. And everybody thought they were going to kick us that night, but I think we showed them as time went on that we were the superior team. It was a great night for D.C. athletics.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the challenges? You know, there are so many pluses coaching at a HBCU. But, Coach, real talk, there are some challenges coaching at Howard, coaching at A&T, coaching at Central versus – if you're at Notre Dame or if you're at Syracuse or University of Maryland, talk about some of the challenges that you and other coaches overcame coaching at Howard and at the HBCU level.
Yes, but there are major challenges. Most of them involve facilities and money to run your program. A lot of HBCUs, and they're not going to get it this year, but they have to play about 6 games for guarantee. I remember when Fang, when he had his great teams over at Carpin, he had to play about 12 games just to keep the athletic budget there. So although he played, you're not going to win. You might win once in a blue moon on the road playing against the Syracuses and the Big Ten people. So we have to be able to gradually make our schedules so we won't get embarrassed by taking too much money. But that's the way college sports is set up right now. Those teams this year and last year who lost that revenue, and they're going to lose it this year, it's going to severely hurt the HBCUs. We didn't have the major contracts, television contracts, until this year. And a few years we've been getting on. And I want to congratulate the commissioner, Dennis Thomas, for getting HBCUs on TV on a pretty regular basis, ESPN2 and the championship. So, yes, the challenges of doing that. And then going into a young athlete's house and telling his mom and dad, hey, you can get the same thing here that you could get at the Big Ten, at LSU, or some of these majors. But when they visit the school and they see a 20,000-seat arena in basketball or a 100,000-seat arena in football, it's very hard for them to turn it down. It's very difficult, and I'm glad to see these young men who can make decisions for themselves, and they aren't swayed by, you can get everything here, but you can get everything and a great education and probably meet their wife for the future at a predominantly HBCU school. So I found that more and more Caucasian kids are coming to HBCUs now. So it's kind of open. If you have these progressive new presidents and progressive athletic directors who now are really going all out to make the better HBCUs even better. And I really want everybody to know that I think one of the best coaches in America, black or white school, is the young man at North Carolina Central. He does a super job there with almost nothing. And he gets them to the championship or wins it every year. But he has been somehow overlooked. And he's now talking about it a little more. So I'm wishing him all the luck in getting a major job soon.
Coach, you mentioned two things I want to piggyback on. One is the nurturing that you receive and the overall life experience that you receive as at an HBCU. For example, years ago, the players who were at University of Maryland and Georgetown, in some cases, they selected those schools to play basketball, but you would see them for social events on the campus at the university.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of them would be at our games when they weren't playing because we had – they felt at home. They felt very comfortable. And I saw Iverson more at Howard than I saw him at Georgetown.
Great point.
Bay Durham. They right up there. In fact, we almost had Bay Bay. I thought he was gonna come to Georgetown, and John got involved in it, and he went the other way. And mainly, the other Durham, his brother, helped to get it over to Georgetown. But great kid, great young man, and we used to fight every time to try to get those kids from the area to come up here, and we came close quite a few times.
Yeah, and then, Coach, I got to get your thoughts on if there is a season, Howard versus Notre Dame. And as I mentioned, I've known Coach Kenny Blakeney for a number of years when he was a young student athlete. I interviewed him on the show a couple of weeks ago. I've known Coach Mike Bray for a number of years as well, and had him on the show. But I'm looking forward to this. I think this is a very historic moment, a historic game. Notre Dame versus Howard at Howard, coming to the Burr.
Yeah, they have to. Those guys must like Blakeney a lot to come to Howard, or either they're overconfident. I hope they're a little disappointed when they leave. But that doesn't happen very, very seldom. I think we played Bradley one time back in the day in our gym, and that coach at that time left there very disappointed. And so if they come, if you can get the same home-and-home situation without the big payment and the reward and no choice in who officiates the game, that's a great coup for Howard to get Notre Dame, which is a major name in all the sports and academics, to come there. I'm sure Adrian may have had something to do with it, or Coach K, to push to get the Bray to come in there. We had some. I know if Morgan Wooten had been alive, he would have pushed it. And I want to say Morgan was a good friend. And did a lot for athletics in this area, and we'll miss him as well as a lot of other coaches who have gone, who have passed away.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, Coach, I was going to get to that later on, but it's a good segue. Let's talk about some of the coaches that you and I were near to, and you mentioned Coach Wooten, and of course I remember. What was the summer maybe of 75 or 74 where you and the Maffa and Coach Wooten, you guys went on a tour abroad?
Yes, that was very exciting. We went to Brazil, that was set up by the State Department, and DeMatha went as the high school, and Howard went as the collegiate representative. We played. That was a great in the early. It was early in my career at Howard. I think it was 77 or 78.
Yeah.
When we went over there, and we played in some of the towns that we played in. Otherwise, other than where you see the statue of Ipanema, Sao Paulo is nothing but New York City, and it was a great experience for our kids. We played 10 games. I think we won 9 of the 10. And DeMatha may have won all of theirs. I'm not certain. But I think we represented the United States very well over there. And that's something that I always will cherish. We had some great teams then. We had, you know, Dorian Dent and guys that were a little before Spriggs and those guys. But we had some players that were all met in the Washington area that somehow ended up at Howard, and I was a young guy. I think I was probably 29 or 30. I was 29 when I first went to Howard in 75.
Wow.
So I had the energy and everything to get out there and beat the Butches. And I always say, people say, you beat the Mather how many times? We beat the Mather, including Summer League, 6 straight times.
Coach, I watched them. Hey, look, if folks don't believe it, I will certainly back that up because I saw every last one, and the one matchup that you had a tremendous advantage was at the point guard position because, you know, not taking anything away from the young man DeMatha had, Billy Mecca, because he was a fine player, but you had an outstanding point guard that very few people recall and talk about, named Tyrone. And Tyrone, Coach, it would seem like he would send, you know, if we're playing now, we would say a Uber or Lyft. But back then, we used to say he would send a taxi for Billy Mecca to make sure he got to the gym. We called him Adding Machine because all the numbers that he got. But, no, you know what, and that's when I started as a really young coach, coaching CYO and junior varsity. And I would come to the games and sit behind the bench and take notes from you and Coach Wooten and Joe Gallagher and on and on and on, Joe Dean Davison. But I always say that any time you can beat the Mafia, especially consistently, that's not luck. And it's not just about having the horses. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, I see some things now, Butch, that they're doing the pick and roll. We were doing the pick and roll with Tyrone. I think Tyrone Jones beat DeMatha at Cole Fieldhouse on top of the key pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And he came off the pick and roll. They backed up and bottoms up. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was. He could shoot. He was fast. He, you know, he could pass. He was a great, great young man. He just retired from the government, and I hope he has a great retirement.
Yeah, that was a great team. And, Coach, I've always said, and maybe I'm a little partial, but I would say that we've had some great eras, some great decades of basketball, but my favorite is from 73 to 78. I think we had some of the greatest basketball being played in this area's history and in the country. And you guys at Eastern, and Eastern versus Dunbar. Talk about the rivalry with Dunbar and Joe Dean Davison.
Yeah, we had some battles. Yes, indeed. Those were great times. We really had some wonderful games. I remember the good and the bad. I remember Stacy Robinson hitting a fadeaway in the corner over at Spingarn to keep us out of the championship that year. And then we played them in the Inter-High Championship up at Wilson. And I don't think they even scored for the first 10 minutes. You know, we just warm up. Bebe was a freshman, or he was a sophomore, and they had Craig, but we were hostile, and we just warm out that particular time. But we did have some outstanding battles with Dunbar and Jodine, rest his soul.
Yeah.
But you know, it wasn't only those kids. I think if you go back to another era, you were probably a little kid at that time. There was great basketball in the early 60s with Dave Bing, Ollie Johnson.
Oh, yeah. Monk. Been gone. Coach, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that now. No. We're going to definitely get to that because you were a standout baseball player at the time at Spingarn High School. But I want to talk about one other guy that was a good friend, a good mentor. I love him to death. And he was your assistant, and he took over. And that's Coach Herman Cannon, just a wonderful guy. And when you left Eastern to go to Howard, Coach Cannon didn't miss a beat, and he had some great teams at Eastern as well.
Yes, he did, and God rest his soul. So many
yes.
great players and great coaches from the area. Of course, yes, Herman Cannon did an excellent job. He stepped right in when I left, and I think he got to the championship game with Ratcliffe and Rodney the year or two after I left, and I went back to see a lot of their games, and he was a good friend and a good man.
He was
and we're missing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then also, before we get to the early 60s, but even in the 70s, Spingarn, under Coach John Wood, they had a squad over there as well. I mean, it was just, you know, every team, every school, Ballou, Anacostia, you know, every school had a player or two, and it was just great coaching. And that, you know, Coach, and that look, I'm not one of these old guys to say everything was great during my era. No. But I got to say it, compared to when you were coaching, when I came up and started coaching, the coaching today, they rely too much on talent versus coaching. Now, you got to have talent to win, but even when you get the talent, you still got to coach them up.
I agree. You gotta put it together and know each player's strengths and weaknesses and blend your team together so that they will be in a winning manner and not just let one guy or two guys do all the shooting and everything. You got to have the Rodmans and those kind of people that rebound. You got to have a varied people who excel in different things. And you got to have a leader also. Leaders, if you don't have a team leader, I don't care how good a coach you are, it's probably not going to end well as much as it should. There were some excellent teams. You had the Mackin teams with JoJo and and JoJo Hunter, and you had Bill. I can't think of his name. There were so many great players, including the DeMatha and the St. John's players and the battles we had with them. But that era was unbelievable. The Coolidge players with Frank Williams, great team. So they have been excellent basketball. I remember going into Anacostia as a high school player. Do you know Anacostia was 98% white?
Yes, absolutely.
In the late 50s?
Absolutely.
It almost changed overnight. You know, I went to Kramer playing with Keller Miller, and there were no black players on Kramer's junior high school team. So we're going through that transition again. It happens so fast, and you it makes your head spin. But this is a basketball mecca. There have been great football players here, but this is the basketball mecca of all time, all the way through the year.
Coach A.B. Williamson in the Coach's Corner. And Coach Williamson, let's go back to the early 60s, late 50s. You alluded to it, but expand on what was it like growing up in D.C., playing sports, going to school in the 50s and early 60s?
Yeah, it was different times. Of course, it was right in the time when segregation broke, and you had the predominantly black schools, and I think the only school basically that in the Washington public school was Wilson that had a lot of white kids, but and Cadoza had some, and Western, which is now a art school.
Yeah, but Duke Ellington.
And Duke Ellington now. But at that time, Bingham was built in 54, and it just started off as such a great basketball traditionally school. They had so many. Bernard Levi, probably one of the top five players ever to play in the D.C. area, but never went to college and didn't get the exposure. But Dave Bing followed about 2 years behind him. And at that time, in order for a great black kid to get a major scholarship such as Syracuse, Notre Dame, or somewhere, they had to actually fail a course. They had to fail a course in high school and come back for their senior year again to get the exposure and the strength to go and play at the major schools. That happens quite a bit. Elgin Baylor, of course, of the 50s, was the greatest of all, and he should be top five right now. I don't care who we're talking about, LeBron or whoever. Elgin Baylor was one of the top five high school players that went to Spingarn and then went on. He was at Phelps and Spingarn, had some great coaching, with Dr. Roundtree and all those people who were the coaches at Spingarn. And then we had the Ella Johnsons and Dave Bings and people who all went to major universities and were great citizens after they finished their professional careers. Of course, Dave Bing was mayor of Detroit. So,
yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And a top 50 professional player. Very smart. What people don't realize, Dave was so smart out there. He knew what to do. I saw him beat McKinley. I wasn't that great a basketball player. I played baseball pretty good at that. But I saw him beat McKinley with only using one hand. He had hurt his wrist like the day before. He shot all left hands, but he was smart enough to get where he could get his short jumper in and left hand. I used to follow those guys, and those guys I always look up to as great representatives of basketball in the D.C. area. And then you have James Brown, multimillionaire, and you know that decided to go to Harvard. You know, so
that's right,
I mean.
Yeah.
We got all kinds. And another kid that played, I can't think of his name, that played at Wilson, went to Harvard with him.
Floyd Lewis went to Western and went to him.
Okay, right. He played under, I can see this.
Under Herman Daves.
Herman Daves, correct. And he went to Ivy League, too. So,
mm-hmm.
The tradition of the athletes that have come out of D.C., especially in the sport of basketball, is that we can take a backseat to nobody. I can tell you, I can go back like a history book because I followed it. I didn't miss many games at all as a young person around. My proudest moment, though, Butch, is
okay.
When I coached Eastern High School baseball team to three consecutive championships when we were winning big in basketball. But we won three and a half championships, and I had a kid named Tubb Gaskins.
Left-handed kid.
Yeah, and I tell you, those were real fun. There was no pressure on you. just went out there and we had some athletes and we won three straight. I always look back and say that's one of my proudest moments of winning both basketball and baseball in a given year.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you had Lonnie Pern and Willie Wood. And, you know, you had some great athletes in football also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did. And, Coach, let's talk about how, and things are different now, but growing up in the 50s and the 60s, as you stated, basketball was king, but also back then baseball was right there where that was the first love of most basketball players. Most basketball players that you speak with that came up in that era, they'll tell you, hey, you know what, I excelled in basketball, but initially I played baseball. Talk about baseball in the 50s and early 60s in D.C.
Oh yeah, it was great baseball. I first met Fatty Taylor playing 13 and 14 baseball. You know, Fatty went on to play for the Virginia Squires, Denver Nuggets, and so forth. He was a great athlete and a great baseball player. And Glenn Harris, great baseball player over at Anacostia, still say he's better than he talks a better game than he was. His brother Ron.
Harris brothers, great guys. Love them both, yeah.
And Rock Newman, really
right.
Good baseball guys from the area, and many, many more that we had super baseball. And then the fields got run down because of money and the transition. And a lot of the inner high, at the time they called it the inner high, did not have the types of fields that you would want to play on. So we moved to the game of basketball. It didn't cost as much. You didn't have to buy a glove. All you had to do is have a ball, go down Watts, go down Calamella, play outside, you know, and get a name for yourself. And they were offering a lot more scholarships also to get to college in the sport of basketball. But baseball was super. Baseball was my first love, and I should have pursued it, but I just loved basketball much. Even though I couldn't play, I knew the game. I used to watch Dave, and every day. I don't think I missed a practice or a game in my 3 years at Spingarn and Calamella. But I just enjoyed the game. Went to A&T under Cal Irvin, Monty Irvin's brother, and I used to sit in the stands and watch there. And unfortunately, I got a job, but able to get a job at Eastern High School right out of college under my principal, Moose Saunders, who was also my high school biology teacher. So they had some great teachers. We cannot forget those great teachers through those schools that gave us the foundation to go further. In those institutions. And then you had Bob and those guys when H.D. Woodson opened up. I mean, they had some great teams and great athletes, and they still have that.
Yeah, Bob Hedden, Coach, he was at Cardozo. And, you know, Coach Hedden is in the Hall of Fame, maybe one of the few that's in the High School Hall of Fame in coaching football and girls basketball. That's a rarity. And then when you talk about the great basketball players, the Elgin Baylors, the Dave Bings back in the day, but you had some other guys like Ollie Johnson and Roy Monk Wilkins. So many great players. But, Coach, and I know this is a sore spot with you and me as well as a Washingtonian, with so many great alumni and distinguished individuals across the city, the area, and the nation, how could Spingarn close its doors?
All I can say is one word, politics. I went down to the buildings, government buildings, and many times. Ivan Brown, another track athlete at Spingarn, we religiously went down and some other former students that's been gone to try to save it because the powers in the mayor's office were Dunbar people. We didn't. They just decided to disband Spingarn. Spingarn could have been redone, and it's still a great statuesque school on the hill. But it was all about politics and where the particular people in charge of politics at that era went. And Dunbar was a base for a lot of great collegiate people who went to Dunbar, went on to be great students and leaders all over the world. So, but they really had a lot. That had a lot to do with it. And we fought a good battle. I remember sitting down there many days, paying that $20 parking fee to go up there and fight a losing battle. But that had a lot to do with it. But Spingarn should be, something still needs to be done with that building, with the renovated problem of people in this metro area. They could still do something. It could be a great middle school. They could fix that school up, and they had a problem about a year ago with bums and everything living in there. Hadn't even closed it up. Very disappointing.
Disappointing. Yeah,
and we still
excuse me, quick coach. No. Quick coach.
Yeah, we still have that kind of situations that we really need to involve. The Spingarn Alumni Association is still active, and we still are trying to get something done for Spingarn, and I think that they do a super job, and we work hard. We're not going to have a picnic this year because of this pandemic, and so many things, great things for kids and we usually have, but we're not going to be able to have this year. We're going to meet on August 8th about the whether we can do anything with the Pigskin Club, because we just don't know whether they're going to have sports. But we're going to try to get involved in some way to help young youth in the area. As you know, I'm the president of the Pigskin Club of Washington, and we still have some outstanding members, and we give a fall and a spring banquet every year. But we don't know what we're going to be able to do because of the pandemic 19. So there are a lot of things up in the air in the sports world, and I just pray that we can have some sports this year safely, and that our race and our people in this area can get through without catching the virus. And following instructions of Dr. Fauci and other great leaders other than the president.
Well, hey, look, I saw on social media, and it was funny, but it was profound. And someone had written, even on Gilligan's Island, the people followed the advice of the professor rather than the millionaire. So that was profound. Coach, let's talk more about, and I'm glad you mentioned the Pigskin Club, because we've got a lot of listeners who may not be aware of the Pigskin Club. And let me just say this before I turn it back to you. Last week, last Tuesday, it was Blackout Day, and that was the day where people were encouraging African Americans and others not to buy, but if you had to buy or spend, spend it black. I didn't necessarily subscribe to that because I say that we're beyond eating baby food. We have teeth now. You know what? We can eat steak. We can eat hamburger. And what I mean by that is it doesn't have to be one day. It can be every day. And I say that to connect it with the Pigskin Club. And when I learned the history of it, I had so much admiration and respect. The Pigskin Club started when some of the members tried to join the Touchdown Club, which was white, and they were refused. Rather than yell, scream, and cry, they said, okay, we'll start our own, and we'll be bigger and better. And I've always said, Coach, it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. Talk about the Pigskin Club. I love you guys, man.
Well, I was very excited, and I still am very excited of where we are going now. But we had a little lull there, but we're getting some of the new coaches in the area to join the club. We're getting our ladies to join the club that have
That's
a
right.
great athletic background. We had a very good meeting and enlisted 8 more people in the club just before this virus thing started and knocked out everything. But we are still very active. We are going to get involved in a few new things that you will be hearing about, partnering with people, partnering with professional athletics, and partnering with maybe like an Allstate insurance company or some of these people to bring upon change and to honor our youth and our citizens who are doing excellent jobs in the D.C. area. We introduced we introduced Monad, who was so instrumental in helping me start a career as a coach in basketball at Eastern. She raised money, went to liquor stores all around that community, raised money for us to get uniforms. And at one time, we were the sharpest guys in the metropolitan area with our V-neck uniforms and all of those things. But it's these kind of unheralded people who we want to recognize and honor, because that's what makes D.C. and the metropolitan area go round. That's what makes it great. So we are not giving up because of the pandemic, but we have to change. You have to adjust to what's happening. So we're going to be doing some things. You'll probably hear about it. And through young men like your show, you can get the word out that we will still honor young black athletes on the collegiate and high school seniors this year, but it may have to be on a different format.
Coach, can you just give our listeners just a brief history in terms of the origin of the Pigskin Club, how it got started, who started it, and the original members, and how many of them?
Okay, well, Howard University is from young doctors in the 30s, started the Pigskin Club in the basement of the doctor, and I'm having a brain lock now. I'm 75, but they started the Pigskin Club, as you said, because Sound Club wouldn't let them in. That they became such a major club through the years, with Frank Bowling as the president, former great D.C. coach at Cadoza and so forth. And there have been some of the – at one time we had mayors and all city leaders all in the Pigskin Club. The Pigskin Club used to be about 500 members, and they used to meet at RFK once a month. It was really a big thing. Through the years with transition, we lost some members, but we're being resurrected now. Arthur Linda does an excellent job, former
yes.
coach at Roosevelt, and he's the board chairman, and he has been a past president. The Chesley brothers are big in our club right now, and we have some people, and I have been honored to lead the Pigskin Club for the last couple of years, but we've been stunted a little bit because of these various things that have happened that we couldn't. I feel like I need a couple more years to really get this thing going and to get our club back on top. We still honor the athletes. We still do a lot of community work. We could not go to the Redskin camp this year because there is no camp. It used to be in Richmond. We would take buses down there. There are so many things that we want to do, but we have to clear this virus out and honor our youth and community leaders again.
You know, I've always been honored in the last couple of years or so when you guys have asked me to serve as master ceremony. And, I always tell people when certain people call, I can't say no. And, it's always such a privilege and a blessing to be connected with the Pigskin Club. And it's always a first-class event. I mean, just first-class. And, of course, initially it started with just the football, but now wonderful spring sports with basketball, softball, track and field, et cetera. And it's just outstanding, Coach. I really miss it this year, and I pray that next year we can get that thing going again, because that's one of the events that I earmark on my calendar that I will be in attendance whether I'm officially or not. I'm there.
Yeah, we did. We really had a great banquet last fall. Just pandemic came in. We got it in on the 28th of February, but it was one of our better banquets. And everybody pitched in and did an excellent job. It was held over at Catholic University and Brisbane Hall, and we were scheduled to go back there this fall. But we will make some adjustments and whatever is best for the health of our citizens and student athletes, we will do this coming in 2021. But those plans still are waiting, because we don't even know whether there will be school this year. And
that's right.
It's too many unknowns. I hope.
That's right.
I know one thing. We will return. Schools will return, and the great athletes of Washington, D.C. will return.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, Coach, one of the things, and I have to say this, one of the things that was kind of canceled, or at least I couldn't make it, was, you know, I was going to come and surprise you at a celebration that you had scheduled. What was it, back in May or April?
My 75th birthday celebration. I was going to bring all my former players from high school, college, all the fellas that I grew up with over there. My wife was putting it on, and all of a sudden we had to wasn't meant to be. We weren't able to have it, but that was going to be an exceptional event.
Well, I was all set to attend, and the last two items I want to hit, and you alluded to this, in that while the school, Spingarn, officially is closed, but the Alumni Association, with people like yourself and Joyce Colbert and D. Williams, just to name a few, you guys are always active, raising money, helping young people, having a good time. And certainly, man, that Spingarn Green Wave spirit is still alive.
It's still alive, and Ivan Brown is, I gotta give him his props. He has Ivan Brown Realty out in Pennsylvania Avenue, but he really keeps it going. He works tremendously hard to keep the Spingarn name and the members informed.
And Coach, we've got about 2-3 minutes left. I want to just give you the ball, the superstar that you are. Get out your way, and you use these final minutes as you see fit.
Well, thank you very much, Butch, for inviting me. I think I'm living now, and I'm watching all the different political events as well as the sporting events. Things are changing so rapidly in the world of sport, in the world of politics, that all I'm hoping and praying is that over the next few years, we come back down to earth, adjust, get back to the basics and how we should live, how we should comport ourselves, and really bring the D.C. area back to one of the top areas for athletics as well as education in the Washington, D.C. area. We have it, we can do it, but we have to stop listening at the noise all around and concentrate on our youth, because they are our future, and get them educated, whether it be from a remote area or from personal face-to-face. But that they are the key. We must work with our youth. We must keep them out of the street, and we must guide them in the proper way so that they can be the future leaders of America. But this is certainly a time of change in so many different areas. And I'm hoping that some young leaders, both white and black, in the leading in the right way, come out of this, and that we can look up for, and as I get too old to do anything, that I can look up to and know that this world will be left in a stronger and better place.
Coach, well said. Look, man, I've always had the greatest amount of respect for you. As I mentioned one time, I was seriously considering, until I was talked out of it, applying one year. You were looking for an assistant coach, and I read it in the paper, and I was really seriously considering it because of my respect for you, man. And so, hey, it was a pleasure and an honor as always to see you and to have you on any of the shows that I host. Thanks, Coach.
And thank you so much, Butch. And you did an excellent job as a high school coach and a teacher, and you're looked upon in a very positive manner in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area.
Well, that means a lot coming from you, Coach. Thank you.
All right, and I appreciate it.
All right.
And don't forget Ed Hill. He works tirelessly.
Oh, my goodness. Ed Hill is one of the guys, one of my secret weapons behind my shows. I don't make no moves without consulting with Ed Huck Hill, a legend, Hall of Famer in terms of sports information directors. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So thanks, Coach.
Yes, and thank you so much.
All right.
See you down the road. See you,
you
down
will.
The road.
All right, mm-hmm. And folks, that was the legendary, iconic D.C. treasure, Coach A.B. Williamson. I hope you enjoyed this history of D.C. For some of you who grew up in D.C., you could relate to some of the exchange we had. And for some of our listeners outside of the area, hey, it must be very informative for you. Well, tomorrow at 7 p.m., we've got another legend. We've got the man they call the shot doctor, the man that the NBA calls when they need a player to improve his shot, be it Shaquille O'Neal, Penny Hardaway, Chris Webber, and you name them. We've got Buzzy Braman. Yes, the shot doctor, Buzzy Braman, will appear in the Coach's Corner tomorrow at 7 p.m. And I want to thank Horton's Funeral Services. As always, if a family member or friend is in need of a home-going service with dignity, it's Horton's, 202-829-9000. If you're in need of any dental care, it's Dr. Edward T. Buford, 202-667-8818. And as always, you go to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com to pull up this show and past shows and read the magnificent coverage and writings of my producer, Rick Hampton Sr.
Well, folks, that's it for this evening. Join us again, as I said, tomorrow, 7 p.m., in the Coach's Corner. We'll have the shot doctor, Buzzy Brayman. But until then, make good decisions, because life is hard, but it's even harder when you see.